talk is about to begin. Hey, 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 come on in.
Welcome back to your Friday Buckeye Talk from Cleveland.com. Doug LaMarie's special guest today. It's James Palmer of the NFL Network, who is an Ohio State grad. And he was here to cover Ohio State's pro day, whenever it was, 10 days ago now. And I've always wanted to have him on. We've had Albert Breer on, who's an NFL reporter who went to Ohio State, and now James is joining us. This is a good hour-long conversation about the NFL's views on Ohio State and about these specific players, how they've done in the draft preparation process, what teams think of them, C.J. Stroud, Jackson Smith and Jigba, Paris Johnson, DeJuan Jones. We did talk about Marvin Harrison Jr. as well. So good conversation, and this is a run of podcasts here. Saturday, this is your Friday podcast. I kept thinking I was going to do Rants podcast this week. Expect Rants on Monday, I think. Also expect Nathan and Steven to be back here on Saturday to update you on Ohio State student appreciation practice, which will take place on Saturday. Unfortunately, I will not be there, but they will be, and that's another good look for us to get a good handle on these guys going ones versus ones, who's running with the top groups, who's looking good. So Ohio State, again, has been very open, and we're appreciative of it, very open this spring with our access to stuff. So this is going to be another big one. Look for that podcast Saturday. We gave you the cornerback podcast late on Thursday. Look for safeties pod, Sonny Styles, Josh Proctor, Lathan Ransom, those guys on Tuesday next week. That's the plan. And we do have some more availability talking to running backs and tight ends next week. So we have a lot going on. I also would direct you to the College Football Survivor Show. I feel like we've been doing some good episodes lately. We did a coach swap episode. It's me and Shahan J. Haraja. Wherever you find Buckeye Talk, you can find the College Football Survivor Show. We just took head coaches and said, you got to send them somewhere else. Where would we send Ryan Day? I had an idea for Ryan Day. Where would we send James Franklin? Who might we send to Texas, right? Just what we think coaches would do in different environments. And then also, we did a podcast talking about Alabama. We had Mike Rodak of AL.com join us. And I think this is of interest to Ohio State fans because Ohio State was once in this position where you're a football power with an excellent basketball team, the way Alabama was this year. Who's capable of that? How can you sustain it? Do schools have to choose one sport or the other? Then we look at it the other way. We look at basketball powers and ask, how come they've never competed at the highest, highest, highest levels in football? So I think it's a good discussion that absolutely applies to both Ohio State and Michigan. How do you try to do it in basketball when you're a football blue blood? So that's a good conversation. Again, College Football Survivor Show. But we're going to do James Palmer. We appreciate his time. We always appreciate you guys joining us here on Buckeye Talk. And then next Monday, look for Rants. And on Saturday, look for a wrap from the latest Ohio State practice. Here we go on Buckeye Talk. Joined now by James Palmer of the NFL Network. James, I don't know if you know this. I've had you on my list. I said, I got to get the guy on Buckeye Talk. So finally, we're making it happen. I approached you at the NFL Combine. You said, who is this man bothering me? I said, please come on our podcast. And now here you are. So thanks for joining us on Buckeye Talk.
That is not how I think of you, by the way, at all in any stretch of the imagination. And by the way, I have to say this, being, you know, back for the pro day, and I mean, you're very beloved in that building, I have to say. Did you know that? Do you feel that way? Do you feel that they talk about you in that sense?
The thing is I'm a jerk. I'm a jerk and I yell at people. So, but I've just been around a long time. And so you just grow on people. It's almost two decades that I've been doing this. So after a while, they just can't get rid of you. So they have no choice. No, so, so you were at the reason, James, we're here to talk about Ohio State's draft guys because you were there as part of the NFL Network's coverage of Ohio State's pro day. But before we do that, I want to talk about you as a Buckeye. So you went to Ohio State. What led you to come to Ohio State?
It's wild. So I grew up in Philadelphia. My family's from Chicago. They're diehard like Big Ten. Like they were like, you got to go to a Big Ten school. Like that is college. That is experiencing college. And we have plenty of great universities in Philadelphia and tons of them. I wanted to go away too. So it was kind of a match made in heaven. My sister was kind of recruited there to play lacrosse. And she was like phenomenal lacrosse player. And I went with her on kind of like a visit and was like, oh, yeah, this campus is awesome. And I did, I hated Penn State. I just hated it. I went with her to visit her friends and I was like, who, like, is everybody just drinking in the woods? Like, this is.
This is you and Terrell Pryor, man. It was too country for you.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Terrell Pryor was like, no, I got to go to the city. And so I loved that there was, you know, that it was in Columbus. I loved Columbus as a city. The Blue Jackets were just getting going when I got there my freshman year, and I'm a big hockey guy. So that was like kind of like, oh, pro sports is still here right near campus. And so I was excited about that. I wanted to play baseball. And I was a pretty good player and could have maybe walked on in that sense and had an idea in there. But like definitely arm issues was definitely a big problem heading out of high school. I played in a bunch of showcases and stuff getting out of school. And that was kind of probably what overused me. I ended up tearing my labrum and the baseball thing went out the window. But I really loved, honestly, like the intramural and club scene was like huge for me. Just because I played four sports in high school and I loved that I could do everything and get the big college experience. And then they had everything that I was looking for. Degree-wise was also a huge selling point. I wanted to be a coach and a teacher. And the way the educational program was set up there was you go with your master's included, five-year program. It was great. I thought that was wonderful. I was going to go back to Pennsylvania and teach. My sister's a teacher and my mom was a teacher. And it was kind of like, I know I'm going to need to get these classes eventually, right? You just got to keep taking classes when you're teaching. I want to teach high school. And I was like, well, if I knock these master's classes out right from the jump, this will be great. So that was kind of like all of the selling points of Ohio State. It was I graduated high school in 2001. So it was my first year was Trestle's first year.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Nice introduction.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't mean to speak out of turn. To my knowledge, you're not a teacher or a coach. You're on TV.
Yeah, very much so.
What happened?
This is kind of how it connects, because in the middle of my time at Ohio State, like my sophomore year or whatever, they changed it from a five-year program with your master's to a four-year program. And a group of us that were in the middle got like, I don't know how to put this politely, just absolutely screwed in terms of the way the major was changing. And in education, you know, so much is a prereq for the next quarter, for the next quarter, for the next quarter. And so a group of us just got like, it was like 40 of us just got absolutely screwed. And so like there was going to be like a quarter and a half where I was going to like take nothing really before it realigned up. And I was like, well, maybe I can get a communications degree while I'm at this. And let's see how that works. It was a terrible idea because it just doubled my school. So I ended up graduating with a BA and a BS. So like sophomore year in the spring, I was like, well, let me just get a Bachelor of Arts as well. So I literally started from scratch. Nothing carried over in terms of general curriculum classes, nothing.
Oh, wow.
I needed to grab a foreign language. So I took sign language, which was awesome. And so I ended up picking up a communications degree. And then went in the summer for two summers as well while I was finishing the education degree. So I was like, I'm too far along. I'm still going to finish that degree. Let me just add this other degree to it. And so I finished my student teaching. I passed the Praxis in Ohio. Like I was all like, this will be my backup plan, because with my communications degree and writing and stuff, they were like, you need an internship. And I got an internship with the Blue Jackets, back to the original portion. And so Todd Chirac took me on in the PR department of the Blue Jackets. I believe he's still there, running that, all of that for the Blue Jackets. And they were so young. They were like, you can do whatever you'd like go to the locker room, interview guys. And I started interview players and write on the website. And I was like, oh, I think I like this a lot more than the teaching thing. And then the second in command guy, Ryan Holtman, below Todd Schrock, was like, hey, do you want to work for the Destroyers? I mean, I got to run the Destroyers PR team too. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. So I was like second in command for like the Destroyers PR team, because nobody was there really covering the games. I don't know if you were. And so I think it was like Nagy was like the quarterback, I think, back then. Matt Nagy.
Okay.
I just was like, oh, this is what I want to do. Like this journey. And my dad has been on television for an eternity. I mean, he covered Bear Bryant down in Birmingham, was in Philadelphia on TV forever. So it was like these two sides, like teacher, television. Those are the two parents.
Wait, is your dad Scott Palmer?
Yes.
From Channel 6 in Philadelphia?
Yes.
Now I see the resemblance. Okay, I grew up in Pennsylvania, so like I know who Scott Palmer is.
Okay, you know. Okay, perfect. Yeah, that's my old man.
Yeah. So you had it in your blood. Scott Palmer is like a legend in Philadelphia television.
For sure.
You had it in your blood. You just didn't know it.
Exactly. And I kind of fought it. I'm not going to lie. I that thing you just hummed right there, no lie, was like hummed by opposing fan sections in high school basketball games. Like, I'm dead serious.
TV boy.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it was. Like, I went to Upper Marion High School, opposite of Kobe's Lower Marion High School. And we're playing. Like, I played some really good players, Jameer Nelson, Rip Hamilton. Like, I played those guys in high school. And like, I'd be sitting there at the foul line, and it'd be like, dun 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 dun. And I'm like, oh God. So maybe, I don't know, maybe subconsciously I wanted to like get out of Philadelphia and not do that. But it was just, it's just too enticing. I love television. I love everything that comes with it. I love every job that comes with TV and journalism. I've done most of them, a lot of them behind the camera too, from being like an associate producer for Inside the NBA down in Atlanta to producing AAA baseball games to anything. Like, I just love television. I love sports television. I love live TV. Everything about covering sports from any platform is just right up my alley. And maybe I just was lying to myself that teaching was the bag. But
thank goodness Ohio State boned you on your major, so you had to figure it out. So
exactly.
Way to go, Ohio State. So you're the football seasons you were at Ohio State then were what? 2, 3, 4, 5? Were you still there in six or no?
And six. So my last
six. Wow.
So yeah. So Trestle's first year. So my sophomore year was when we won it all in 02. And like, so yeah, I came in with like in my introductory climber, Dustin Fox, we always joke about this when I go on his radio show up in Cleveland, that we were in the same, like, there's like a one credit course, the like introduction to school in the fall. And we were in the same class there. I remember him. He doesn't remember me. Now he does, I guess. But yeah, so my very last game as a student was Ohio State, Michigan, 1-2. Troy Smith, quarterback. Yeah. Well, we went 42-38. Does that sound right? Or something like that?
Sounds right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, wow. What a nice little run by you there. It was
real success. Yeah. We were turning it up a notch. Cause I remember a lot of people like then after I'm working, they're like, oh, you go to Ohio State, like the dominance. I'm like, dude, like the program was not in great shape when I was like, I want to go to school here. I mean, nobody knew anything about Jim Tressel, at all. And they were having trouble beating Michigan. And so like, it was not like they were riding high when I decided to come to Ohio State.
Yeah. And then you just lifted them up.
I think I played a big part, you know, if Maurice needed something, I was going to help him out, you know, that type of thing. I actually didn't know too many guys on the team. Brandon Schnicker was like my only really good buddy, the fullback, buddy on the team. Cause he went to high school with all my roommates from Sandusky.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. So you have this exposure. How long have you been at the NFL Network now, James?
I joined in 15. So it's been a minute since I've been there. Yeah. I covered the Mountain West Conference out in Denver. Then I covered the SEC. Then I was a beat reporter for the Houston Texans for 2 years before I closed a lot of TV stations down, Doug. I'm not gonna lie. I closed a lot of them down. When I signed on at NFL Network, I think the blog, like Awful Announcing, had a write-up that was like, everybody at NFL Network watch their back. James Palmer's going to shut this place down. And so I joined in 15, and I had a choice to see where I wanted to live. And Peyton Manning was in Denver. We had nobody in Denver. Gary Kubiak and his staff had just, you know, gotten fired from Houston and signed on to be the head coach in Denver. I was like, this is all perfect. And I loved Denver, living there, covering the Mountain West Conference. So it was full circle. And now I get to cover the whole league from there. It's just perfect being centrally located there. I'll probably go skiing later today, tomorrow. Oh, you know, we'll see. That'll be the hope. So we have a little bit of a lull before the draft.
Not as much skiing in Central Ohio. There's some.
I was part of the Ohio State Ski Club, which was essentially a drinking club, but I was part of the Ohio State Ski Club. Yeah.
Okay. So you have this base of knowledge. You've been around. You've seen things. You know Ohio State from the inside. Now you cover the whole league. And so you get to see Ohio State from the outside. So you were there at Pro Day. And James, I'm just curious, like, what did you think of the vibe around that Pro Day where you have a guy like C.J. Stroud who's in contention to be the number one pick? You have Paris Johnson and Jackson Smith and Jigba and Zach Harrison. And then, by the way, you have Marvin Harrison Jr., who has one more year, but everybody's salivating over that. And by the way, his dad is here, and he's in the Hall of Fame. And like, just what did you think of that scene? And, you know, I have not covered Pro Days at other big-time programs. Obviously, Alabama's Pro Day is awesome. And, you know, Florida has a Pro – everybody has a Pro Day. Give us the context of, like, what you thought of this particular Ohio State Pro Day in terms of kind of the show that was put on and the talent that you saw out there.
Yeah, so let's put some context first. Pro Days are always different when there is a top quarterback performing. It's just a completely different vibe to the Pro Day. You mentioned Alabama. I've done their Pro Day the last 4 years before this. I saw Bryce throw last year when he threw at their Pro Day, just like CJ threw the year before too. So I had a chance to spend some time with Bryce last year down in Tuscaloosa. I've done Florida. I was at Johnny Manziel's Pro Day, which is unlike any Pro Day you've ever seen, which George and Barbara Bush showed up on a golf cart and there was a DJ and he was wearing a helmet and shoulder pads and camo shorts. It was nuts. I've never seen a Pro Day like that one. But when there's a top quarterback performing, there's just a different vibe because the throwing session is what everybody wants to talk about. That's why we made such a big deal about it, putting on an NFL Plus. It was our inaugural like live NFL Plus broadcast, actually. It was CJ's throwing session. So there's just a different feel when it's a top quarterback. And then when it's top programs, like in Alabama or Florida, I've been Georgia's Pro Day, like, you know, I've been Texas's Pro Day, like Ole Miss, I was at the Pro Day when DK Metcalf and AJ Brown both came out in the same Pro Day. Actually, Dawson Knox was at that Pro Day too, a couple of really good players. And so there's just a different feel at those programs, like Ohio State, Bama, I would put at the top, just because there's so many guys that have the potential of getting drafted somewhere. And that there's just a different feel because of the program and because of the quarterback throwing. 118 NFL personnel is a lot. Like, that's more than you see almost any other Pro Day. Bama's has changed a little bit because they've been running two Pro Days, which is interesting the last couple of years. They've had two the last, I want to say, three, because I did Max Pro Day, and then I did the one after. Yeah, like, they've been running two Pro Days, which splits it up just a little bit. But the size of this is not what you normally see. No, from NFL attendance, it's not normally what you see at all.
With what you know of the league, and on a day like that, where you have the quarterback and you have Jackson Smith and Jigba as a receiver, and you have MHJ as a receiver who's coming next year, I don't know what does Ohio State have a? I don't know if reputation is the right word, but what does the NFL think of Ohio State as a place to produce offensive players from this Ryan Day offense, from what we've seen with Dwayne Haskins, the late great Dwayne Haskins, and Justin Fields and CJ Stroud and Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave and all these other guys? How do people talk about Ohio State?
It's kind of evolved in the opinion of the league, right? Like, remember just being known for these great linebackers for like a long stretch, right? When when I was in school with like AJ Hawk and those guys, and then like we became kind of like DBU for a while, and there were great corners coming out for like first round picks each and every single year with, you know, all these guys. And now over the last couple of years, I'd say it's shifted to going like, because there's been some misses, I'm not gonna lie, like at the corner spot. The way the receiver group and the skill guys over the last couple of years, it's almost like they're almost like can't misses. I remember when I was down at Bama last year and I was, you know, talking to everybody about what Jameson Williams is going to be. And all they kept saying is like, how was he in the same room with Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave and Jackson Smith and Jigba? Like, this just isn't right. Like, to have this amount of talent coming out at these positions. Now, we've never been known as a school with great quarterback play, right? Up until recently. And I remember talking to Ryan Day after the Pro Day. He almost kind of hinted like, we've been really lucky. Like, it's almost like, I'm ready for this offseason. I got to get ready to really work at that position. Not to say it's a lack of talent or anything. It's just like, man, have we had a consistent just ability to make plays. Now, there is an aspect, and I will say this. in a school like Alabama that's put out really good receivers too lately with Judy and Jameson Williams and Ruggs and all of these different guys. There is a caveat that makes teams work a little bit harder in their study because of the program they're coming out of. Guys are running wide open. Like, so there's a little bit of extra work that's done from a lot of scouting departments and receiver coaches that I talk to, because you got to go like, is this guy this good? Or the system itself, and you can never blame the system. I always hear that from scouts too. Like, you can't blame CJ Stroud for throwing to wide open receivers. It's not his fault that they have more talent and scheme it better than most of their opponents. Like, just the way they're built. You can't knock the system that he's playing within. But it also makes you take an extra beat, and why pro days are important, because you want to see them run what you'd like them to run in terms of routes. That's a big part, because, you know, and it's funny because pro days are personal workouts are kind of shifting, and pro days are getting more important. More and more agents now are more or less telling teams, like, you know, teams want to bring in a D tackle and be like, you know, we want to put them through what we're going to run up front. We want to do that. And agents are like, no. We're not popping an Achilles. We're not doing a workout for you. Like, but that's becoming more prominent. So the controlled environment of the pro day is becoming actually more important. So like, standing there, you know, with a bunch of guys watching Jackson run, they want to see if he can run the stuff that they want him to run. Now, that's hit or miss whether that's going to happen in the pro day. But all this long-winded answer to it is like, Ohio State is almost too good at getting these guys open that it adds a layer of evaluation to these players, because they want to know if the system is that, or if it's the player. And that's been, you know, I don't want to say a curse for these guys are succeeding, but it's actually adding work to some of these NFL programs.
I do think that certainly factored in to sort of like when CJ Stroud was in the Heisman race and people were trying to figure that out. Now, they lost to Michigan both years. I do think if Ohio State would have beaten Michigan both years, he might have won the Heisman both years.
Agreed.
But that was I know I had lots of conversations with people about, you know, what's the system, what's the talent around you, and what's the guy. Mm-hmm. But it's strange, James, because you look at a guy like Josh Allen, right, coming out of Wyoming. There's no, like, whatever Josh Allen is Josh Allen.
Yep.
That's it, right? Whereas, what helps the player more? You said you were Josh Allen's pro day. Like, there's a, so he doesn't have the structure around him, but you also kind of get all the credit for it. When you have more talent, does it almost, I don't know if the word is hurt you, but does it bring up more questions? Or is it like, well, hey, man, Wyoming, I don't even know what Wyoming is.
Yeah, I mean, I covered Wyoming. Let me shut, my dog's pushing this door open. Let me, like, so this is the way it's thought of, because there is both sides of it, because you always want, let's go to the quarterback spot since we're talking about Josh Allen. And this is a question with CJ a little bit. A term that a lot of teams use are you a multiplier? The meaning of that is, do you raise the level of play of everybody around you? Do you put the team on your back at times? You know, Jalen Hurts is the type of guy that if I talk to guys in that locker room, I remember Dallas Goedert, their tight end, tell me this year. He's like, he'll look at us and go, F it. If you guys aren't going to do it, I'm just going to do it myself. And he's going to just put the team on his back and make them better. Are you a multiplier? You can see that a lot of times if you're from a program like we're mentioning with Josh Allen in Wyoming, because he has to. So you get that box checked when the talent is lacking around, say, the very uber-talented quarterback. But there's also the side where you have to put the evaluation in, the pro day comes in and your workouts and your meetings come in, because then you get a Trey Lance situation where you're like, well, who's he playing against? You know what I mean? So there's that part, because it's like, okay, he's raising the level of his team, but also he's playing a step ahead and faster and quicker and bigger and stronger and mentally a step ahead than everybody else he's playing against. Let's put that into a factor. When you're playing at Ohio State or Alabama, like, your competition is better than those guys. But I think it's safe to say, like, nobody was protected probably better than CJ Stroud this year. So are you going to walk into that type of protection? Like, what is it going to be like if things break down? Because everything breaks down in the NFL. On a regular basis. So it is really, you can't speak in generalization specifically at that spot, because there's so many like different factors we kind of just brought up in these two questions, right? Of that, who are you going against? Who are you playing with? who's around you, and then how did you play in the situations where you weren't supposed to succeed? Those are kind of the big ones. But like back to like the one, I don't know why his name jumped into my mind, like Jeff Heuermann. Remember Jeff Heuermann?
Oh, yeah.
Like I remember when he was drafted, and even Urban Meyer, I think, was on our set and was like, this guy's going to be great or whatever. Then I think like Denver realized like, no, this guy's running wide open because everybody else is a first round pick. Like that's why he's putting up some of these stats and getting some of these favorable matchups. Those are the things that you got to dissect with a program like Ohio State.
All right, let's get a little specific then.
Yeah.
This decision that the Carolina Panthers are going to have at number one, presumably between Bryce Young and CJ Stroud. I like them both. Mm-hmm. I think they're both calm and poised in the pocket. That seems to really matter for me. You can also obviously look at, I think Bryce moves around a little bit better. CJ is 5 inches taller.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think Carolina will go about making this decision? And how difficult of a decision do you think it is between these two guys?
It's very tough. I consider them 1A and 1B at our shop. Anybody from an ex-executive like Mark Ross, who's won Super Bowls in the front office with the Giants and been with the Eagles, thinks it's, you know, Bryce Young hands down. You know, Bucky Brooks, who's a scout and a former player, and he thinks it's CJ Stroud hands down. And so I think it has to be exactly what you're looking for. I think the world of Frank Reich, I've covered him for a long time. I think he is tremendous with quarterbacks. I'll put this out there first. I think, in my opinion, for both organizations and the success of both quarterbacks, it should be CJ Stroud and then Bryce Young. I think Bryce fits the Houston Texans and what they want to do really well. And I think CJ fits the Panthers and what Frank Reich wants to do really well. I think if that's the way it went, in my just opinion, that might be best for both quarterbacks. And we can get into it, but the thing that I've been told by a lot of evaluators on both guys, let's start with CJ and what people love about him. One of the things that he does that they love translates to the NFL game are he has a very quick release. It's not a long motion. It's a weird motion that some guys can't put their finger on. Some say it's mechanical. Some say he's a pusher, but then they don't want to say a pusher is a negative thing. It's just out quick. The way he throws a ball, they love that it works in a closed pocket. When a pocket's coming down on you and guys are in your face, he's going to be, the way he throws, really over the kind of the top, the way he throws is he's going to be able to get the ball out under pressure. Huge thing in the NFL. And he can stare down a guy coming at him and he's fine throwing the football. They love that. And the other thing about him that teams really, really love is that when you go, he's a progression quarterback, which that's a lot of the NFL, and to go through your progressions. But he doesn't go through them with just his eyes and his arm. He goes through them with his feet. And that's huge at the NFL level, and it's rare at the college level that guys are that good with going through the progressions with their feet. And I'm here, and then I'm here, I'm here. And all three things follow each other. That's huge in a lot of the way some offenses run. That would help in a Frank Reich type of system, the way his footwork works with his eyes and with his arm. That's a huge compliment to him. And that's something that he's already pro ready in. I think you're right. I think they both process well. I think mentally, the both of them play the game a little bit better than, not a little bit, a lot of bit better than everybody else playing the position in this draft. It's not really that close. And I should say this too, in most of the evaluators' minds and in both of these programs' minds, it's these two. There's a gap, and then it's the other guys. Hooker is really climbing, actually, in a lot of NFL circles right now from Tennessee. But with Bryce, the ability to create, like I mentioned, everything breaks down in the NFL regularly. They like his ability to improvise and create and make throws. Both of them are natural throwers, but he's a little bit more of a throw from a variety of angles. But CJ's unbelievably accurate, which half the teams in the league, maybe more, think you can't fix accuracy. Like, you just can't. You're either an accurate thrower or you can't. I had a quarterback coach say this to me this year where he was like, look at Aaron Rodgers. He's like one of the most accurate throwers ever, right? And he throws the ball from every angle ever. Every angle possible. Kirk Cousins throws it from the exact same spot every single time as one of the most accurate throwers ever. His point is, you're just either accurate or you're not. And CJ's unbelievably accurate. So those three traits are the ones that teams really like about CJ in terms of physical traits. We can get into the mental side of both of them. But those are the ones that I think set CJ apart a little bit.
I spent a lot of time when the Browns were drafting DeShone Kizer trying to ask people, of, can you teach accuracy? Yeah. And then DeShone Kizer started throwing balls off the roof for the Browns. It was like, nope.
Nope.
It's like I was down on Josh Allen because I was like, can't teach accuracy.
He's the outlier.
Josh Allen got in the league.
He is the outlier.
So it is. I'm still riding with my I don't think Josh Allen is going to make it take, and I've dive bombed right into the ground with it because. But you're trying to tell people, well, he's the exception that proves the rule. So don't draft a million inaccurate quarterbacks, which would lead us to an Anthony Richardson conversation if we weren't on an Ohio State podcast. So, yeah. I think that CJ is really smart, and I think that processing thing. I also think that CJ at we talk about it on this podcast. CJ has heard the noise sometimes, right? Like he hears the criticism and he's going to go to a losing team and he's going to have to fight through that. And it's one of the things where I think CJ is a real dude, but sometimes like if you're a real dude, like, I mean, real people, their feelings get hurt when you say mean things about them. If you're a football monster, you don't care what people think. I'm going to prove the haters wrong. So, you know, I certainly don't view that as a negative, but I'm really curious how CJ is going to handle it because I think he had to push through a little bit at Ohio State, and he did, and he played his best game in his last game. But I think a franchise has to know that and has to realize that. Doesn't mean you have to baby him, but you're going to have to. This guy, I think he's a grinder. I think he's going to be in the film room. I think he's really smart, and he's going to process. But you've got to make sure that, hey, man, if he starts 1-6, like you've got to help him push through this a little bit and be a number one, man. Whole mama. You're the number one pick in the whole entire draft. How do you think all that factors in this emotional, mental side of all these quarterbacks?
Yeah. And that's something that a lot of teams do in their meetings. I hate to say that they do this, but this is what they do. They push your buttons on purpose and piss you off on purpose in the meeting to see how you respond to it. Like, and that happened with a couple of CJ's meetings at the combine with teams that I talked to. And it was kind of like, they were kind of like jabbing at him and seeing kind of like how he'd respond. I'll tell you this, the teams I talked to loved the way he responded. They were like, he's got some street to him. He's got some bite to him. Like, we pushed him here and he pushed right back. Like, they want to see if you're going to cave. They want to see if you're going to give in. They want to see, like, if they go like, well, you know, I'm trying to use a really example of it, but like, almost like knock your game in a sense, or say something that they don't want you to agree with, but they're trying to force you to cave and agree with them. And they want to see if you stand your ground, right? They want to see if you stand your ground to back up your point. And he did. And he kind of came back at a couple of coaches. Like it showed them something that they really wanted to see. Like, I want to see that competitiveness. And I want to see when you're backed into a corner, are you going to shrivel? Or are you going to come out with your chest puffed and say like, no, you're not going to do that. Like they love that about CJ. And that happened with more than one team because they want to see if, like you said, how do you handle being the face of a franchise? Now I think and I talked to Ryan Day about this, the corporation that is Ohio State football, like you're already the face of that for the last 2 years.
Yep.
I think that puts you in a lot better spot than a lot of some of these other guys. Like we mentioned Josh Allen coming out of Wyoming. And Bryce has had to do it as well with, you know, most popular person probably in the state outside of his head coach. And so they want to see if you're going to be able to handle all of this, because a lot of times, like, give me this. All right. How often does CJ talk? Did he talk his senior year? Once a week?
Every week. Yeah.
Yep.
Like during the week and then after the game. So twice.
So that's NFL prototype, right? That's all a quarterback is trying to talk once during the week, whether it's Wednesday or Thursday, and then after the game. That is what you do. He's ready for that. Like those are little things that coaches check off. Like say he goes to the Texans. I already know, knowing him and knowing the way he's operating, that is huge in D'Amico Ryan's mind. What are you as a leader? Do you have the it factor that you can gravitate the guys on the defensive side of the ball to follow you? And the third is, are you experienced and ready? Right. That was one thing. Like, look at the guys who thrived in this last draft that wasn't very good. Like Kenny Pickett played pretty well because he played a lot of games. Like Brock Purdy played pretty well. He played 4 years at Iowa State starting. Like having all of those experiences being the guy, I think does prepare CJ for being the face of a franchise. I think it also probably helps in the two markets, Some people may think Houston's a big media market. It's not. And Charlotte isn't either. I think it's phenomenal that neither guy is landing in New York City or Philadelphia. Charlotte and Houston, I think, is great for both of these guys. And the best part is they're both landing with a head coach that has time on their side. The last thing you want is to change systems, to change head coaches and guys. I remember Sam Bradford, I think, went through like 5 offensive systems in his first 5 years. Like, nobody wants that. You got 2 fresh head coaches. D'Amico Ryans is on a 6-year deal in Houston. That there's patience with both of you. And I think all of those things like help out both of these quarterbacks, whether you go 1 or 2.
And I do think I also agree on the Stroud to Carolina, Young to Houston, just for whatever reason.
But they just fit.
Seems to fit better. And I don't know if it's because C.J. Stroud played for an offensive head coach, and I feel like Frank Reich is the NFL version of Ryan Day, and Bryce Young played for a defensive head coach, and Nick Saban and D'Amico Ryans are both going to want you to get it done, right? Maybe I don't know what it is, but I do think a lot of that would fit together. I'm sure. Yeah. I would imagine Carolina has not made a decision yet. They had the whole crew at Ohio State Pro Day. They flew everybody to Alabama, had the whole crew there. Then I think they went to Will Levis. I mean, they're checking everybody out. Do you think they have this is what this process is for. They're still deciding, but even within that, do you have a gut? Would you guess it is CJ?
I think they know. First off, they're not going to tell anybody. Two, this is not like I remember being down in Jacksonville for the Trevor Lawrence draft, where it was like, Trevor Lawrence is going 1. I don't know what I'm going to talk about for the next week that I'm down here in Jacksonville, because there is no secret. This guy is the best prospect we've seen since Andrew Luck. This is with 2 cents. When they made the trade, I think helps them out tremendously. Making it before the pro days, making it before 30 visits. You might have even had an idea of who you wanted, but now you get to uncover every single stone about both guys. And I love that David Tepper went to both of these. That this should be, you have the first overall pick, you traded up for it, it should be all hands on deck. It should be everybody involved with their 2 cents on what they think the decision should be. So you're all on the same page. I mean, the last thing you want is you made this move, you make this pick, and then the owner's like, well, I didn't like him. Like, yeah. I love that David Tepper's a part of everything that they're doing. I think they have a sense of who they want, and they're just trying to either reassure themselves and just make sure everything is checked in that sense, or it's down to, we like 2 guys really well. Let's be honest, the 2 guys are above everybody else. This foolishness of Anthony Richardson going 1 is just nonsense. And so let's just make sure we like the makeup of both these guys and see if we're really, really sold on 1 and go through the whole process. I mean, they're not done. I'll tell you that. They're not done looking at both guys either. But I think all you're doing is trying to reassure where you already stand. I think they know. I do. But with all of this time that we have, you got to do your due diligence on all of it. And I think time on their side actually helps them quite a bit.
Okay, let's talk about a couple other guys in this draft for Ohio State. You're there at Pro Day. You're watching Jackson Smith and Jigba go through his workout, and this is a guy who basically didn't play.
Yeah.
But we saw Micah Parsons opts out. Micah Parsons goes high, goes to the league, kills it. Ja'Marr Chase opts out, goes to the league, kills it. Like, it does. Do you think it had any effect that Jackson Smith and Jigba basically lost his last year in college? Does the NFL care about that?
The 2 things with that I'll say is no. They don't care. The other part is they're curious how it finished and why. Like Ja'Marr Chase, when like I opted out and I'm preparing for the draft. Jackson hasn't said that to the teams that I've talked to that have interviewed him. He hasn't said, I shut it down and, you know, I had the hamstring and then I finally just, you know what, I'm going to shut it down and get ready for the draft. He didn't say that in a couple of his meetings. And some teams are curious about that. And they honestly told me, like, I wish he would have just said that. Like, just tell me flat out. Like, I shut it down for the league, man. I shut it down to prepare and do that. Like, you didn't run the 40 at the combine when the last time you tweaked your hamstring was apparently, you told teams, October. So I'm not entirely sure some teams were questioning that. I've heard a lot of different things with the hamstring. There's mixed diagnosed, different things. I've heard a lot of different stuff about it. That's kind of the one little question. Like, hey, man, like, shoot me straight about why this happened on the back end of the season. I will say that. The only other thing that they look at is go, it makes watching the film from 2 years ago a little bit, I don't want to say dated, but when guys I talked to after the pro day watched it, they're like, he's already grown as a receiver. What I was watching is kind of old a little bit. And they like that about him because they think he's going to keep getting better as a receiver. That's kind of similar to the Jameson Williams stuff. Like there was like old, if you watch him at Ohio State, you were like, I understand why this guy's not on the field. He's not better than these guys. And then you watch the growth he had in later stuff. And you're like, oh, like they kind of see that in Jackson. Now you're not seeing it on game film, but you're seeing it in the pro day. So to answer your question, no, it's not really a concern that he missed the year. In their eyes, they think he's really good. We can get into him. Because he's kind of fascinating. They're comps.
So that idea. So first, like probably short answer. It just feels like he's bigger, heavier, and quicker than Jordan Addison, which otherwise is kind of a comp. It feels like Jackson Smith and Jigba ahead of Jordan Addison, and then Quentin Johnston is just a completely different kind of receiver. Yeah. It's almost like not even the same position. Mm-hmm. But is it? I mean, are we assuming JSN's the first receiver off the board? Probably.
I think Steve Smith and I, you saw Steve was there, and I love watching receivers run with Steve, and I got to stand next to him when Jackson and Marvin were running everything, which was a blast for him to just tell me. I mean, Steve's going to be in the Hall of Fame, and just tell me the way they move and why they move differently and why different guys move the way they work. And him and I were talking about, does Jackson's skill set limit his suitors, right? Because of the way he's built and the way he plays the position may deter some teams. The reason I say that is because most of the teams I've talked to about Jackson say that they don't have a comp for him. Like they literally don't have a comp, like the way he's built, the way he runs routes, the way he runs, plays the position. They're like, most buildings are like, I don't have a comp for him. He's got these like short legs that are really thick. And the point I'm making is, whether he'll be the first receiver off or not is how that building feels about not having a comp. Some buildings are like, I love that he doesn't have a comp. He's a one of a kind type of player in the way he plays the position. We have faith as a coaching staff. We're going to use him like this, this, and this, right? There's other buildings that are a little insecure going, I don't have a comp for him. What's he going to do? And there's an insecurity there about how do we use them? We pick them that high. What if we missed? Let's go with something safer. That can play into a building that's overthinking itself and probably not having the confidence in how they want to use him. What I've been told about him from most teams are like, I don't care how fast he runs. He gets open. And if he's in the slot, I think he's going to catch a million balls and nobody's going to be able to stay with him. And that's the sense from teams that don't really value traits, if that makes sense. The teams and the scouts that I talk to that really go, he's a football player. Like, that's it. And that's the best compliment you can get from, like, a high-level scout. Like, he's a football player. A perfect comparison, as we're talking about no comparison stuff, is, like, Jalen Petrie at Baylor last year. Undersized safety, didn't check a lot of boxes trait-wise, wasn't the fastest safety out there. But when I talk to scouts in that area, they're like, the dude just makes plays. That's all he does. And that's what he do in his first year in Houston. When he's drafted in the second round, he has like 140 some odd tackles, like fifth in the defensive rookie of the year voting. It's just, he makes plays. That's my defensive comp to Jackson, where teams are just like, the guy just makes plays. He just gets open and he can't be covered and he just makes plays. That's not valued equally in every building. And that's the interesting part when you look at a player like Jackson.
It does feel like, I think, you know, the agility, the short area quickness that you saw with his testing at the combine, I think he beats man coverage in the slot. And then I think he has a great feel for the game and he knows how to sit down in a zone and get open, like find the area. Like he and CJ 2 seasons ago were just really good at that. Like CJ, they were really connected and it was like, well, whatever you're supposed to do here, we're just going to figure it out and you're going to be open. And then you might turn a 9-yard route into a 70-yard touchdown as it did at times too. So,
I would say though, one quick other note is like the one thing that's lacking in him from teams is they say like he doesn't have a ton of explosiveness. Like, is he a big threat? Is he a game breaker? Like, say Garrett Wilson? Like, is he have that extra something? No. But when they watched him at the combine, I talked to multiple people that were on the field, when he's running with all the other receivers, and that's the spot at the combine. You want to see this guy run, then this guy run, and it's an easy eye comp right away. They're like, everything he does is just effortless and smoother than everybody else.
I do think there's been this whole thing where Garrett and Chris, when they were at Ohio State, said, oh, Jackson's going to be better than us, right?
They both always said it, right? Yeah.
Playing with them sets the Big Ten single season receiving record, like with Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave beside him. I like that they say that. There is a part of me that Garrett just always felt like to me like a guy who could explode on every play. And I think we saw enough of that in his rookie year in the NFL. Chris Olave was actually better as a rookie than I expected, because I do think Chris is just a little more of a smooth, deep threat kind of guy.
And it was a weird situation that he was in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tough spot and was a really productive player. There's a part of me that like the assumption like, well, Jackson's going to be even, it's like Jackson's going to be better than the two best rookie receivers in the league. I wonder, like long-term, 10 years from now, who's the best NFL receiver of that group? I still think I might put my money on Garrett.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to take anything away from Jackson, though. But you watched. I mean, Garrett and Chris were both nuts this year.
They were phenomenal. They were fantastic this year. And you're right. I just think also, because the other concern with Jackson is, can he play outside? And can he be physical enough with his hands on the outside and get off a press on the outside? That's one of the questions some teams want answered. I think the ability to play inside and outside is becoming more and more prominent now in the league, and they want you to be able to be moved around much more than, say, even 5 years ago. You're just an outside guy. No, that's not really the way this works anymore. Well, if you're a great inside guy, can you be a great outside guy? And that's what they're curious about with Jackson. In terms of working the middle of the field, like it's incredible what he can do in terms of leverage, in terms of, you know, a couple of receiver coaches were telling me, like, dude, like, because I don't get it like they get it, right? Like, I just try to talk to the right people. And they're like, when he has to get outside and a corner has outside leverage, to be able to still get out there and run what you want and get open is mind-blowing, like how he's able to do that, because his football IQ is through the roof and his understanding of spacing and things like that is through the roof. And that really is the NFL game. And I think he is going to thrive. Some teams think he's just going to be incredible inside. But again, that lack of explosiveness we're talking about with Garrett, teams don't really see that with Jackson as much.
All right, let's talk about the other receiver before we get to another guy or two in this actual draft. So Marvin Harrison Jr. So while you were talking there, I was just running through and draft history. And I got back to Calvin Johnson in 2007. And I thought to myself, how many receiver prospects since Calvin Johnson would maybe be better than what we might think Marvin Harrison Jr. is? And I think I'm maybe at Ja'Marr Chase and that's it. Mm-hmm. We know he's good. We know he's viewed as the best receiver in college football. But what is the real context potentially with this guy and what NFL people are thinking right now?
Oh, trust me, there were plenty of eyes on him at the pro day. Like, there was no like, this guy's not coming out. Like, all right, let me look down at my phone. Like, no, that was definitely not happening at all. And watching him with Steve was one of my favorite aspects, because somebody would go, and I'm trying to remember who it was, and like they'd go into their break and they'd almost be too amped up, right? Too many steps getting out of their break and turning, and like just too fired up to it. And then he's like, watch Marvin go. And like he goes and it's like one step gone. And he's like, to see how he has the ability to, a half a step before his break, he gathers his body. Like he puts himself in full control. Because a lot of people, like there, a lot of guys, like especially at a pro day, everybody's watching you as a receiver. You're too amped up, right? This is what Steve was telling me, and he's like, you get in and out of these breaks. You're pitter pattery too much. You're too quick on yourself. He's like, watch how Marvin handles it, and it was just completely different than everybody else. It was just like gather his whole body without slowing down, and figure out his footwork before he has to do the break, and then get it and go. And like he's like, do you see how it just looks different? He's like, don't even just like it just. Do you see it first? And I was like, yeah. So I saw that. And then I'm like, yeah, it just looks different than everybody else. Then he started describing to me why, like I said, like how he gathers himself, how he finds his spot, how he finds the ball. Like there were a couple of balls that he looked really late at, if you remember, right, where he was running the whole time, and then the late eyes. Like, Steve was like, you don't have to do that at a pro day. But, like, you're doing that as an underclassman at a pro day, that you're, like, showing everybody, like, watch how late my eyes can be, like, if I was in tight coverage right now. And he's just like, ball. Like, those things on top of, like, what I hear, you probably know this better than me, like, the work ethic-wise and the constantly catching balls and things like that. Like, there's a lot of excitement for what he's going to do next year. And it's funny because I don't know what it – I was almost to say it doesn't matter, Doug, but maybe it, I mean, it does matter, but you get what I'm saying? He's already did so much this past year, and the talent mm-hmm. he has and the understanding he has of the position. I'm curious what he has to do this year coming up. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of these things I think it's going to be interesting. It's one of those things. Again, it goes back to the sort of lots of talent discussion that we were having with CJ early on. Well, CJ was surrounded by great receivers, but also mm-hmm. Marvin had a Heisman candidate, possible number one pick,
as a
throwing him the ball. Mm-hmm. Now he's going to have a first-year starter, whoever it is, and it might be his high school teammate, Kyle McCord, and they have a great connection.
Philadelphia, St. Joe's Prep.
Nice. Look at you guys. Kevin Stefanski, all you Philly guys.
I know, so, right? Sean McDermott.
So the idea of, like, I think Marvin, right? Marvin's going to get even more credit from mm-hmm. what Ohio State does this year, because you're going to see, oh, well, Marvin Harrison Jr. helped bring this quarterback and this offense along. And there's going to be other great receivers in the field with Emeka Buku, who's probably also a first-round pick, and Julian Fleming, who's a great talent. But I do think it's going to be more about, like, Marvin first. And mm-hmm. in a way that, you know, 2 years ago when you had those three receivers together, it's like, well, I don't even know what this is. And then last year, it's like CJ's being CJ. But now this is Marv time. We said, like, maximizing Marv. Like, how do you go about this? And the things that Ryan Day, I think they're going to move him around the field. Mm-hmm. I think they're not just going to have him be on the outside. They're going to make sure they try to free him up so it's not easy to defend him.
Yep.
And then, right, go mm-hmm. win a national championship. You have the hype in a world where Bryce Young and CJ Stroud. Now, Caleb Williams is coming back, but people don't want to give a second Heisman to a guy. They just don't.
No. Yeah.
Devontae Smith laid it down. What's it look like? We know what it looks like. You probably have to play for the best team.
Yes.
And you have to be the engine of that. I don't know.
Good point.
I think that's out there for him. So I do think there's a lot of things of, like, do you want to be a legend? Mm-hmm. Do you want to be in a world where we have seen, you know, Ted Ginn Jr. and Santonio Holmes and Chris Carter and Terry Glenn and David Boston and Chris Olave. Do you want to be the best of all of them?
Yeah.
That when you think Ohio State, the first Ohio State receiver who comes to mind, like right now, if I said that to you, James Palmer, Buckeye, Ohio State graduate, I say Ohio State receiver, bang, something goes in your head. Is it maybe Chris Carter? Is it Ted Ginn Jr.? Who is it?
Well, Ted was there when I was there. I'll say Michael Jenkins. No.
Yep.
I did like Michael Jenkins.
Holy Buckeye.
I loved it. Yeah. Oh, great. Like, one of the greatest plays ever, right? I remember losing my flipping mind. Oh, my God. Our house exploded. Oh, my God. It was unbelievable. One of my buddies stripped completely naked, ran straight down Norwich. I'm not going to lie. It definitely happened. And so, I mean, I think you still think Chris Carter just because of it. It's just bigger almost than just his career at Ohio State, right? Like, and it's like, it's, I hate to say it, but you do include it just when you just think about it. It's like, well, it's like what he's done on TV, what he did in the NFL, what he's done. It's just his personality that is huge. But yeah, I think you say Chris Carter. I think the other guys are like, I mean, were we wowed by Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave? Yeah, for sure. I mean, they're 1 year into their league right now. I'm not into the league. I'm not going to just go, well, that's it. But, like, Marvin has that chance already. I mean, that the catch, you've covered Ohio State football. Is that the best catch you've ever seen in Ohio State football? I think it's the best body control move I've ever seen anybody have on the sideline.
Where his foot, like, disconnected from his body?
Yeah, where his, like, lower body disconnects from his upper body. And, like, somehow he sees the – like, he's catching it and sees the sideline and, like, turns his leg in an angle that you probably shouldn't and taps his foot in. It was one of the most body control moves I've ever seen a football player make. It might be the best catch in Ohio State history in terms of just the catch, not the magnitude, the play, just the ability to make the catch.
At times I've compared him to Michael Thomas because Michael Thomas was a pro at Ohio State. He had football in the family. Keyshawn Johnson's his cousin. Mm-hmm. Marv obviously has football in the family. You know what's up.
Yep.
You know what it takes, and you bring that to college. You don't have to be, you have that in you.
Mm-hmm.
But Marvin, I think just naturally, the natural talent and the skills are a couple steps beyond Michael Thomas. And we saw what Michael Thomas did.
Yeah.
He was the best player in the league, the best receiver in the league for a couple of years.
I was just talking about
the
on
dedication.
TV. Today. Yeah.
Right? Like, so the combination for Marvin of size,
because
he's got big receiver size, but he kind of plays like a little receiver. But it's like size and technique, all the dots every I and crosses every T, and then the work ethic. The guy's a maniac. And so I don't know. How often do you check all three of those?
The only other guy I can think of that just came to mind that has ever kind of done this from the pedigree standpoint, from the prep standpoint, from the technique standpoint, all of that is Pat Surtain Jr. At with the Denver Broncos. I mean, his dad was a great NFL corner, He came into the NFL. He's 2 years into the league now. Most teams I talk to, they say he's top two corner in the NFL already. Mm. And his size, just like Marvin, is bigger than his dad, but he moves like his dad. And their technique that they were taught was probably in seventh grade. Like, it's so funny. I was talking to Aqib Talib about it like a long time ago, and he was like, I guarantee Pat had perfect technique in eighth grade. Like, and that's kind of Marvin. I bet you Marvin ran perfect routes in eighth grade. Like, it's the only other player I can think of that almost checks all the boxes of the physicality is bigger than most guys at it. They move faster than most guys at their size. Like, Justin Simmons, the Broncos safety, told me once, he's like, he's bigger than me, and he's faster than me and quicker than me. Like, that's not supposed to – and I'm an all-pro safety. Like, that's not the way it's supposed to be. That's Marvin. Like, Marvin is bigger than his dad. He might end up moving better than his dad. But the just the pedigree is there as well. Like, that's the only other guy I can think of that almost checks every single box in terms of being pro-ready the minute they step into an NFL spring workout. I think Marvin's just going to be like – I think his first spring workout is going to be like, is this dude been in the league for 4 years, 5 years?
Yep.
Like, that's the feeling it's going to be.
I told James we do half an hour. We're closing in on an hour. But we're talking Buckeyes, man. Hey, what else are you going to do?
Listen, I mean, I got the cleaners upstairs. My son's watching TV. I'm good. This is
all right.
The problem with me. This is why me and Breer text each other like 700 times during an Ohio State game because we can't stop. Yeah.
I was going to ask you about Breer because Breer's been on, and I was like, oh, so you just are guys. Yeah, you're talking Buckeyes, man. A bunch of NFL guys sitting around talking Buckeyes.
That's what we do.
All right. So let's go to the offensive line. It became like a little viral video, the one Paris Johnson
workout, the jump
from Pro Day at Ohio. Like, he's just – and it again, it's one of these – sometimes I say this, like – and I know the NFL knows this, but still you're not dug in all the way on it during the course of a season. So it's like we're watching Paris Johnson or C.J. Stroud or all these guys every practice, every game. Like, we know it. And then when the NFL comes in, it's like, hey – and like for Paris Johnson especially, it's like, well, yeah.
Yeah.
No, for real. Like this, Right. I don't know if anybody didn't know that before, but as the people who have been here since he committed to Ohio State, and I keep saying, I think it's the best offensive line recruit since Orlando Pace. It doesn't mean the expectation is big Orlando Pace, but this is rare air. And the guy could have been a 3-year starting tackle at most other places. He winds up being a 1-year starting tackle here, but in almost every way, he feels like what you want at the position. I like the idea of like kind of Paris Johnson versus Peter Skoronski. It's a Big Ten battle. Different, right? Mm-hmm. Different traits, different experience. Both, I think, will be excellent NFL tackles. How do you think that shapes up? What's that conversation like for teams? Again, maybe it's more traits versus guys who put down more film.
Well, Paris's path, actually, that you just described has helped him in teams' evaluations. Because think of a team like, say, who's picking? Hey, a team like Atlanta, right? Atlanta's got their tackles. But they're also like, we love Paris Johnson. What are they picking, like 8 or something like that?
Yeah.
Man, we could play him at guard his rookie year. And then maybe we play him at guard 2 years. And then we play him at tackle for the next 10. Like, his ability to do that allow some teams to go like, oh, snap. Like, even if we're not guard needy, I mean, not tackle needy, and we're near the top of the draft, I was just using them as an example.
Yeah.
We can still make this pick. And for the longevity of our tackle situation and our offensive line situation, man, does this put us in a great spot. Like, so Paris's past and the way it happened at Ohio State has actually helped him in rooms, because they can, teams can look at him and make a move like that. And they really love that about him, to where it's like, we can get, and here's the thing, like, we're talking about quarterbacks a lot and like being NFL ready. Being NFL ready as a tackle is hard. I mean, it's tough. Like, those guys that are going against you as edge rushers are some of the biggest freaks on the planet. Actually, a lot of them come from Ohio State. And so, like, if you have a Nick Bosa coming at you, or like a Von Miller in his heyday, who still has a lot left, like the Bend, like these guys that are coming at you, there's a big learning curve for tackles. Specifically the way the offenses work, and it depends on which offense you land, but Paris can also play in every offense. I think that's also a huge thing. The way we're talking about the move, like if you run his own scheme, like you're like a Shanahan type of scheme, you don't think that I can get out and move, like, say, Trent Williams? Like, you can put – imagine him, like him out in the open field, like in that mm-hmm. big wide zone scheme that, like, you know, the Niners run, and he's out there running like a tight end, as C.J. Stroud said to us when he was, like, standing right there. And Stroud looked at all of us, and he's like, my man moves like a tight end. And I'm like, yeah, at 315, he does. Like, and so his versatility, some teams really, really like him. And he's smart. He's got a great personality. He checks a ton of boxes for teams. I didn't know this talking to him. He was like, I used to be a wide receiver. I was like, what? He's like, I play. He's like, they progressively moved me closer to the center. I was like a wide receiver. Then I was like a tight end. And then I kind of moved to tackle, and it was kind of like, I guess maybe I can't catch. So they kept moving me in closer. But I think that just shows me like the footwork and the athletic ability at a young age, even if that was like freshman year of high school or whatever it was, eighth grade. There's just so much to like about him because of the athletic ability and the power that he plays with. He's a super fun one to watch, but this is a weird tackle draft. There's not like a, trying to think. I don't think any of them are on like a, I'm trying to think of like a crazy tackle draft we've had recently. I can't think of one now, but like none of them are in that like ultra blue chip group. You know, that some have come through recently, like a Tristan Wirfs, where you were just like, this guy's just going to be incredible from day one. I don't think that anybody in this draft's really that level.
Okay. Let's talk one more tackle. I've been taking bets. Are offering to take bets. I think DeJuan Jones is going to be a first-round pick, and I keep citing Isaiah Wilson, who was the second Georgia tackle behind Andrew Thomas, went, I think, 30 in that draft, just mm-hmm. a big, giant guy.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, man, giant tackles with decent feet. Let's try that late in the first round. And then he washed out for off-the-field reasons. But I think DeJuan, rare wingspan, rare size, and I think a pretty good athlete, mm-hmm. and young in the sport. Do you think he has a chance to go in the first round?
Yeah, he does. He does because of what you just said. He also has done maybe my favorite combine, I mean, pro day moment of recent memory. When I'm on the floor right there and they're going through the measurements, height and weight and everything, we're standing there. And I'm there with all the, we're getting, it's this and then the bench. And I'm with all the coaches. And they go, DeJuan Jones, like, weight, choice. He chose not to be weighed. Like, I've never heard them yell out choice before in my entire life to all the head coaches. And I'm standing there. Mike Tomlin looks over. He goes, choice? What do you mean choice? How does the dude weigh? Like he opted to not be weighed. It was almost like Seinfeld where he was like, I choose not to run. It was yelled out choice, which was phenomenal. I think what helps him, honestly, is Orlando Brown Jr. Like, I see some comps there, and there's been some success from Orlando. Now he has hurt himself with some of his negotiations. We can get into that and his insistence on playing left tackle, which is also like, but like, it doesn't look great. Right. But man, how do you move when it looks like that?
Yep.
That's wild. Like, and that's the comp that I see the two of them. Like, Orlando Brown Jr. was not super strong, and he still isn't super strong, but the way he moves at his size, like, and it doesn't even always look pretty, But like, it's effective. And how do you move at that size? And how do you stay healthy at that? Like he does. I think that's actually helped Juan in a sense. There's some teams that really want to take a deeper look at him because they're fascinated by the size and the ability to move at that size. There were teams that were not happy he didn't work out at the pro day. I know that for sure. And so he's an interesting prospect, but he's one of those guys like Mekhi Becton, right, with the Jets. You're like, I have to pick this guy. Like, how do you move at this size? And I think DeJuan's kind of like that.
Yeah. No, I've had multiple Mekhi Becton conversations with DeJuan because, like, you just see it. And it's one of the – be a road grader in the run game. Mm-hmm. And in the pass game, it's like, well, you stick your arms out, and at least the guy has to run around you.
Exactly. That's, like, kind of Orlando Brown Jr. It's kind of almost like as long as I – well, when you're playing with Pat Mahomes, it's a little bit easier. But it's like as long as I just get this body that I can move really well for the size of it in the way, you're not really getting there all that quickly. And it's kind of the way Orlando's done it. It's not beautiful at times, but with that size and athleticism, it almost sometimes doesn't have to be.
Last thing, and I just feel like I feel like, is this one of the three biggest storylines going into this NFL season? It feels like a lot of people are invested in what Justin Fields is going to do. That the Bears have, they traded away the number one pick, that they're not taking a quarterback. They got him DJ Moore. They're going to, I would imagine, take an offensive guy at nine. Maybe it's Paris Johnson. Maybe it's Jackson Smith and Jigba, but give him a little bit of help some way or the other. They're maybe rounding into form a little bit here. And we saw what he could do with his legs a year ago. This, how much intrigue do you think there is in the NFL for what the Justin Fields year three experience is going to be?
Well, first off, I love talking about Justin. Like, and I made a big rant on Good Morning Football recently when I was hosting. Like, one of my least favorite times of the year are right now, when there are just things put out there that are just not true. Like, if you remember when Justin was coming out and there was the whole, like, camp process, he's not that bright.
Yep.
He's not that. Like, that still bothers me because, like, it was teams putting misinformation out on purpose. And I don't know if everybody knows this. So hopefully he drops to you. Like, hopefully he can land with us. We'll put this bullshit out. And I think that's really hurtful for a lot of players. And I don't know. I've never talked to Justin about it and how it felt. But that's really crappy, man. And that like has gotten, I'm already an Ohio State guy, but that like has gotten me even like more so rooting for his success because he came into the league with some criticisms that just weren't accurate. And so I think one thing that really stands out at me that he won over in Chicago this year is I did their game against the Eagles. It's actually a game Jalen Hurts got hurt in, and Justin got hurt in it as well, and then comes back. It wasn't even close. And I'm in the locker room, in Philly's locker room, and it's like Darius Slay and, you know, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, all these like loudmouth NFL vets are like, that is one of the toughest dudes I've ever played against in my life. Like, he had no business coming back into that game. Nobody would have thought anything less of him if he didn't come back into the game. Cause I think he got like a rib hole, like just drilled shot, missed like a few plays and came back. The respect the Eagles locker room had for Justin Fields was unreal. And so I think when Ryan Poles pulled the trigger on that trade, I thought that was a wonderful move for Justin. Like, they didn't really tell him everything they were doing, but they were staying in constant contact with him about what we're doing at Juan, what we're thinking or anything. But once you made the trade that early, you're letting him know, like, you're the guy. Like, you're the guy, and that's what we're going with forward. That has to mean the world to a young quarterback that you traded the pick that early and you're going through your offseason going, I'm the guy. I've talked to who's their offensive coordinator? Luke Getsy? Yeah.
Yeah, Luke Getsy.
Luke Getsy about him. And I tried to get some of this out actually that week. I was doing the game like on NFL Network. Luke told me, he's one of the most competitive people I've ever been around. Like, I don't think people get that. And you know this probably from covering in Ohio State. Some people, and I get this in the league too, some people's faces just don't look like they're trying hard or uber competitive, right? I think he just has that look and he gets overly judged for it. And I wanted to get some of that stuff out. I'm not going to lie. Maybe because I'm a Buckeye. But did you sense that, like, when he was at Ohio State, that, like, just the way he carries himself, and nobody can help their body language, it's just the way their face looks. It looked like he wasn't, like, super into it, in a sense, at times.
But also, like unflappable. Isn't bothered by stuff. Like,
great point.
Doesn't get too high or too low. But also, he hurts his leg. He hurts his knee at the end of the Penn State game. And there he is in the Michigan game the next week. And then he has to go in the injury tent. And he comes out and throw a touchdown. Mm-hmm. He takes that shot in the ribs against Clemson, right? I mean, like, this is like a calm, cool, tough dude who can throw it and can run it. Yep. And I always thought, I think he had really good arm strength at Ohio State.
Yep.
And is he as good of a thrower as CJ Stroud? No.
No.
But he's a good thrower, and he is a dynamic guy with the ball in his hands. And I think he's got that thing that you want in a franchise quarterback. So I still, you know, you thought in the moment, it's like, all right, well, sorry, Jets. You fell out of the Trevor Lawrence spot. But, hey, Justin Fields is a pretty good consolation prize. We know how that went.
Yep.
So, and then he gets put in an impossible spot. But I just think I'm fascinated.
Like the worst team around him ever.
Oh, my God.
Terrible.
So, like, what this might be now, like, what this might be is I always thought, like, a bigger Russell Wilson was the comparison for him, because I always thought Justin threw a nice deep ball, and then he could certainly could do stuff with his legs. So I don't think he's going to run for 1,500 yards this year because he'll have a better offense around him. But, man, that's always a threat.
Yeah.
So I think at his peak, he can be a top 10 quarterback in the league if he has the right system and the right guys around him.
Completely. And I think, like, you could use – and I've talked to Luke Getsy about this, like the Jalen Hurts comp. Like, you saw Jalen from year one as a starter, year two as a starter. Now Justin's had to go through different offenses to an offensive change in there. But, like, Luke's kind of point was, like, now that he's shown everyone this unbelievable ability to run the football, everything you run, zone read, everything you run, play action, that he can throw out of, that backside has to respect you keeping it and running. Right? You have to be respected on that. That changes the way every defense plays you. It makes life so easy on Jalen Hurts. Like, in the pocket, run it. I may keep it and I may go or I may go. Now edges have to sit and wait and contain, and they can't come at me like they want to come at me, and they can't drop because then I'll run for five and slide or I'll do whatever. And that makes passing the football easier for him. I think that sets things up for Justin really well. Now he just needs valuable people to throw the ball to. The DJ Moore trade around the league is considered, like, maybe the best offseason move that was made by any team, including all the free agency signings. Like, getting him in that trade, like, maybe was the best move that anybody has made. And so I give Ryan Poles credit in that. But, like, just because of what happened this past season, I think does help him in his ability to throw the football and staying in the same system. I just hope it stays for him. I can picture him being one of those guys that has to keep getting new offensive systems, like, every 2 years. And you always go, what could have been if he was in the same system every single year? Like, I hope that doesn't happen to him. Because I do think the talent's there, like, crazy talent's there. And I think they can change some things with some talent around him to make life easier on him.
James Palmer, NFL Network, Ohio State Buckeye. What do you want to promote, James? What do you want to tell people about? It could be what you're doing at the NFL Network. It could be your wife's art that you were just carrying before you came on the podcast. What should people know?
Yeah, my wife's a brilliant artist. She's doing a thing on ancient Egyptian feminism compared to today. It's deep, way deeper than we've gone. it's going to be fun to see what happens in a few weeks with the draft. I always go to a team that we think is going to do something really kind of wild. And I haven't gotten my assignment yet. We're still trying to figure it out. I was in Philly last year and they made that blockbuster for AJ Brown on draft day. I was in Houston when they traded up a ton to get Deshaun Watson. Like, we always have a sense of what could happen. So I'm excited to see where I go for that week of the draft at the end of April. We have so much fun covering the draft at NFL Network. We have so many good people that break this stuff down. I think our draft coverage is just awesome. So I'm excited for that to be rolling around because it's kind of like a little bit of a dead period now. Now we all start guessing for a while. Hopefully no misinformation comes out about anybody. You can tell how angry that makes me. I'm excited to roll into the draft because then we get to, like, I guess, re-guess again for several weeks on how it all played out. I'm going to bug you. Like, what's happening at quarterback before I go? Like, what do you think's going to happen? I tried to bend everybody's ear there. You know, I tried to see what was happening. Everybody was a little tight-lipped on it.
I mean, it feels, Kyle McCord, when we got to watch the scrimmage last Saturday, Kyle McCord had a good day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Devin Brown can scoot a little bit. So we're very curious about, like, do you want a quarterback who could maybe run a little bit more? But the thing we keep going back to is, as you said, with Ryan Day, and I think Ryan Day knows this, right? He gets Dwayne Haskins. So he has JT Barrett in year one as an offensive coordinator. Then Dwayne Haskins in year two. Dwayne Haskins wasn't supposed to be here. They recruited Tristan Wallace, who flipped to Oregon, and they went back to Haskins. You sort of back into Haskins. Then Justin Fields, boom, you grab him from Georgia. Then CJ Stroud, he's a late add, late in the recruiting cycle, second guy in the class. But Kyle McCord, Ryan Day picked Kyle McCord.
Yeah.
Kyle McCord is like 4 years in with Ryan Day now, like two in high school and two in college. And so, like, this is his guy. And so I don't think that should mean he picks him, but, like, there's not a lot of mystery here. Kyle McCord knows what Ryan Day wants. Ryan Day knows how Kyle McCord operates. And so he's a five-star guy.
Yeah.
Ohio State picked him over J.J. McCarthy. J.J. McCarthy looked pretty darn good leading Michigan to the playoff last year. Mm-hmm. So there's a ceiling out there for Kyle McCord, but it's tough when the guy you're replacing might be the number one pick in the draft.
Yeah.
And I think we talk about a lot. CJ right away wasn't this. CJ against Minnesota in his first start struggled in the first half. Game two, they lose to Oregon. I think an older, more experienced CJ maybe finds a way to lead a game-winning drive at the end of that. So you have to think there might be bumps regardless. They get Notre Dame at Notre Dame in week four. Mm-hmm. That might be tough because Notre Dame's going to have a veteran quarterback in Sam Hartman. But it feels like it's going to be McCord. But we've talked a lot about Georgia has a quarterback competition. Bama has a quarterback competition. But I think Ohio State's two guys and the fact that Ryan Day is still here running it while Georgia and Alabama are working in new offensive coordinators,
yeah.
I think Ohio State should be confident that they're going to arrive at a good decision regardless of who it is, which is all you want here.
Like, yeah.
I don't know for sure who it's going to be, but I think the Ohio State quarterback's going to be pretty good.
Okay. I dig it. I like it. I tried to get it from Heartline. I was trying to ask him. He's like, oh, we're a long ways away. We got time.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, come on. Man.
Brian Hartline. We had our media session with him the other day, and he was basically like, what's wrong with you people? What are these questions that you're asking me? We're like, we get it, Brian. These guys who were in the NFL for 9 years, they don't have any time for guys. So, but it's fun. So, James, thanks for coming on, man.
No time.
Very
no problem
appreciative
at all.
Of your time.
I loved it. I could do this regularly. And by the way, great piece you had on CJ. I read it a while back, or the one on his mind and.
Yeah, I love CJ. We spent a lot of time talking about CJ's mind on here. So, but I appreciate that. Thank you, James.
Yeah, no
and
problem.
Thanks for joining us here. We appreciate you taking time out of your day. Make sure you guys are watching James Palmer on the NFL Network. And we certainly appreciate you guys being part of our Ohio State coverage. For James, I'm Doug LaMaurice. And that was Buckeye Talk.